I have long called Chase Rice the Forrest Gump of country music, and the reason is that guy's had an unbelievable life. Played college football at the University of North Carolina, was runner-up on the show Survivor. A lot of y'all may not even know that. And, of course, he comes to Nashville, and no sooner does he step on Nashville soil, but he and the boys from Florida Georgia Line write Cruise, and that becomes one of the biggest singles in the history of the format. Well, what I didn't know is that that success forced Chase to kind of lose himself. It forced him to become someone that maybe he didn't want to be. And I didn't know that until today. He came in here to Outsider Studios to spend time with me and share that story. We've been friends for a really long time. I've known Chase probably for more than a decade now. I've known him since he was a pit crew member at Hendrick Motorsports in NASCAR. Oh, I forgot that part of his Forrest Gump story. He was that too. He's had a lot of jobs. He's a fascinating individual and somebody that I'm always really moved by his willingness to be vulnerable. He's willing to go to places in his soul that not a lot of guys are. And I really admire that about him. It's a way that he and I have connected very closely over those years of knowing each other. So y'all are going to be really intrigued by this podcast, by this interview, and you're going to learn a lot about the man behind the songs. Here's Chase Rice on the Marty Smith Podcast at Outsider Studios. Thank you for being here this morning. I appreciate you. It's great to see you. Been a minute.
It's been a while, man.
Appreciate you making the trek out here. How about our studio?
It's awesome.
Pretty sweet,
isn't it? I did this was right here. Yeah, it's right in my backyard, basically.
First of all, like, what are you up to? Like, you're back on the grind,
oh,
dude.
Oh, my God. I don't know what my life is like right now, man. We leave tonight we have some Bud Light dive bar shows, so that'll be fun.
And what's that mean? Like, what's that entail? You're going into small bar
going
venues?
Going back to Columbus, Chicago, and somewhere else. So we're going back to kind of where we started. It's crazy right now. It's interesting because this has happened before. Like, when Ready, Set, Roll, and Gonna Want It Tonight was popping off in 2014. It was happening then. It was like, all of a sudden, I'm having this moment, which I didn't realize it then. I was like, oh, what's next? What's next? I'm just enjoying this one, man. It's we got a huge song with Drinking Beer.
Huge song.
But what's coming next, you're gonna lose your mind.
I already heard it. I saw it on your social media. I mean, in the first verse, you got Biggie, yeah. You got SEC football, and you got getting drunk. I mean, it, like, I do love it.
I'll send you the recording.
I would love to hear it.
You're gonna love it because Jay Joyce is producing it.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, he's doing the whole record, so.
How did you get hooked up with Jay?
There's a lot to talk about where it comes to that. We've talked to him for 8 years and never figured out a time to work together because I was doing more pop stuff,
yep,
production-wise. And so going back, you asked what's going on. So me, it goes all the way back to last year. You know, you take the time off. We were forced to. Everybody was. So I was mad as hell at first. I'm like, wait, what?
Why were you mad?
Because I can't tour. What? That's my life. What I didn't realize is, going back to the beginning of my career, I moved here, started touring, and that completely took away from why I moved here. It's like I moved here and then didn't do the thing that I moved here for, which was write songs on the guitar. I stopped writing songs on the guitar. I started, back then it was Cruise, was something that was probably my biggest blessing, but biggest curse too, because then I'm like, wait, that's awesome, I'm gonna do that. I want to be FGL. And I didn't want to be FGL, but that was all I knew, because that was the only success that I knew, actually. That was not all I knew. That was all the only success that I knew. So I started doing that, and then you start touring, and you start writing songs to try to get a hype crowd, try to get a dive bar crowd, crazy. And then you forget that to me is not a long-term play. That's just going to be these type of songs. I mean, I have some songs on my records that I'm just like, I really put that into the world.
You feel that way now?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, what was I doing?
Did you feel that way then?
I was confused then because it was working, but I didn't love it. So,
okay.
That was sore.
This is such an interesting conversation.
This is all going to lead to your first question at some point. But
then I don't want to forget my first question, but it is so hard when you are doing well at something and it's not your soul, and you know damn sure it's not authentic, but you are beating that nail trying to make it authentic.
Well, also, that absolutely, it's brutal.
In here.
It's a battle. It's a complete battle.
It's a battle.
And it's also, add into that, that I didn't know what I was doing either. I was just, I played college football. That's all I knew. And then I learned a couple songs on guitar and moved to Nashville. It's like, I was nowhere near good enough to be here. And I was having success. I don't know how that happened, to be honest. I know how it happened, Brian and Tyler, because they were good. I wasn't yet, but I kind of went down that road learning from those guys. But I was learning something that wasn't me, so that's a problem. But that all led to last year, which was, wait, I can't tour anymore? That's what I do. And it was the absolute best thing that could have ever happened to me, not just as an artist, but as a person too.
Why?
Because I was forced to step back and live regular life. Live, it's not regular, nothing was regular about last year, but I was not on the road. I was not living the life that I'd learned the last 8 years. I was just living. And now all of a sudden, I took the year off. I didn't really write songs. And then I was mad. I got in a bunch of trouble for doing a show.
Yep.
That pissed me off. It's like, I wasn't making money off of that. I was just trying to keep my band employed. That's the only reason why I was trying to do shows. And it was too early for sure. Looking back now, I was like, okay, we probably shouldn't have done that.
What did you learn from that?
Well, I learned, first of all, that a lot of people have opinions. And there was a whole lot of, what's funny is there was a ton of support, actually. It was very down the middle. It was either, you're the worst person ever, you should die, or you're the man, I love you. And which was...
That's America right
that's,
now.
It's everything right now, yeah. But after that happened, it was like, okay, we really can't tour. Now we're not doing this. So I got a real deal, James Neal. He's a hockey player. He's a free agent right now, so Preds, go get him. Him, Ryan Johansson, and then three military families that all live in this area. The husbands of the military families, we've all known each other. We've had like family dinners the last few years, but that was it. We'd see each other once a year. And Neeler hit us up one afternoon on a Thursday. He said, meet us here. It's like a Mighty Ducks schoolyard hockey style game in a caged in basketball middle school court. And from that day on, we went and played hockey and had a blast that day. We got a picture of it. I've not laughed more than I did all of the year last year, but it started there. Then Joe was like, hey, let's go to the house. And we got beers already. Let's go to the house and drink some more. And from that point on, we have not stopped. And the partying, it's a healthy version of partying, by the way. It's not a bad thing. It's awesome. The conversations, the family dinner still, that started. And we'd hang out, started that day, and it turned into 3 or 4 days a week, hanging out all together, sleeping in each other's houses. Just, there's a tiki bar in his backyard now. There's a bar, and there's three bars in my farm that didn't exist before. And then when I say bars, it's more about just like
this
places
is where we drink.
For us to all just hang out and drink together and be friends. And I stopped writing songs. I stopped doing music, period. I started listening to stuff outside of country. We listened to a lot of Nickelback. They're Canadians, so they love their Nickelback.
Do they? Hockey guys love Nickelback.
It's hilarious, man. If Photograph comes on, it's like, oh, no.
Do they sing at the top of their lungs?
Oh, my God. We had dance parties.
Let me ask you a question. If Photograph comes on, it's like an involuntary reaction to sing it at the top of your lungs. Yeah, I don't care who you are.
Yeah. But last year it meant something different. It's like you'd sing it normally. But when that came on, it was like, oh, it's going to be one of those nights. All right, buckle up.
So this is an inference. Mm-hmm. Listening to you speak, it sounds to me like putting everything away. For the first time in your life, being forced to stop helped you find you.
Right.
In what ways did having to stop and reassess enable you to find yourself?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of work that luckily I did before last year, because I remember I was talking to a therapist counselor guy one time, and he was like, he looked at me, he was like, man, I'm going to be real honest with you. If touring went away tomorrow, I think you would fall off the cliff. And he, and luckily, I said, okay, started getting my act together. A lot of work, spiritual, mental, everything. And luckily I did that, because then all of a sudden touring did go away. I never thought touring would go away, but it did. And I was ready for it. At least, I didn't want it, but at least I was ready for it. I didn't fall off the rails. Turns out it was actually went the other way. I started hanging out with friends. I started living a normal life as normal as we could last year and not doing music. And then, and I was concerned. I was like, man, am I gonna be done with this thing? Like, do I care anymore? And then I also got in trouble for a tweet about COVID, which was stupid. That was just me. I was drunk at Tin Roof. And I
what
was
did you write?
Sitting next to my girlfriend at the time, and she said, that is not a good idea. I said, I don't care. I was still mad at the world for the
what did you write?
For the COVID stuff. I said, just lost my taste and smell. Oh, well, dropping a single, drinking beer, talking God, amen, tomorrow. Like, it was stupid. It was so dumb.
And why do you think you wrote it?
Because people were pissing me off, and I just wanted to piss them off back. And it worked.
Okay. Being a public figure is a unique thing. Mm. Everything that is said is news. All of it. Mm-hmm. Especially in a moment like that.
COVID, like, don't talk about it.
Just don't do it.
It's not there's nothing good that's going to come of it. I wrote this letter to my whole team after that, because they're working their asses off. And I'm sitting here screwing it up here all the time, I feel like. And I straight up told them, I was like, guys, public figure, fame, all that, I'm straight up bad at it. I don't like it. It's not a thing I'm good at, and I don't enjoy it. I love, and it's slowly, so I got in trouble for that tweet. I did Fine Bomb. Mm-hmm. And I was at a restaurant with the family that I was we created last year. Went into the private room they had at the restaurant. They had it all set up, had the computer. I was like, I got to do Fine Bomb, but I'm here for this dinner. Did Fine Bomb. We talked, and something just happened during that interview where I was just like, I was just wiped. After the interview, I went up to Joe, went up to Biller. I was like, guys, I'm going home. I just need to be by myself tonight. I don't know what's going on, but I need to go home. So that drive home, I texted my manager, Eddie, or called him. I said, hey, man, I don't know what's going on with me, but I'm just toast. I'm done. And I brought a lot of it on myself. But I'm getting off of social media. I can't do this anymore. Change the passwords. I'm deleting the apps. We'll figure out a way to where I can still participate, because to me, it's an awesome tool to be able to connect with people. But it can also be disastrous at the same time.
No question.
So he said, all right, I've been waiting for you to say this for years. I said, okay. Got home, and now I'm sitting on my couch, and you're wiped out anyway. You got depression kicking in. I didn't have it. I deleted it, and I'm just sitting there like, what the hell do I do now? You can stay on that for hours.
You sure can. It's toxic.
It's bad, man. And so I turned on the TV. I'm like, okay, I'll watch Springsteen's new documentary. Watched that, and he had a song called If I Were the Priest. Keep in mind, I had not written songs at all throughout all last year, and I was pretty much done for the time being anyway. And If I Were the Priest, my first thought was If I Were Jesus. Don't know why that popped in my head. Picked up a guitar, started playing what you hear in rock and roll. Yep. Didn't want to make it complicated, simple chords. And wrote the whole song that night by myself on the couch. And I've tweaked it since, but If I Were Stars and Stripes, pressed on the chest of America's best, putting bad dudes in the ground.
It's a great line.
That's one of my buddies that I hung out with all year last year, and he was on the raid. And he doesn't talk about it. It's not much. And but one night around the fire, he opened up about some stuff. And that was one of the parts where he was on that raid. He looked at it, saw himself in the mirror, like in the compound as they're messing stuff up.
He was on the raid?
The raid, yeah, that raid. And he said he looked in the mirror and saw himself, and he always wore a Velcro, huge American flag right here. And that was the moment he was just like, let's go, man. And there's more words to that, but they did. They got the job done, got home, and luckily he's still with us. But I talked to him about that line because that wasn't the original line, and I sent him two versions of it. He actually was like, "That's the one. Put Bad Dudes in the Ground. That's it, man." I was like, "Done." So stuff like that. It's real stories in these songs now, as opposed to, I mean, how often do you, to this day, get your wife in your truck and cruise around on back roads on perfect nights? It doesn't happen.
No.
It used to. And some nights it still does happen. And there's a place for that. But it's been so overdone. I've overdone it. Everybody's overdone it. And now I just got to the point, I'm like, I want to sing about real stuff. And that's what's starting. And I wrote that song that night by myself. 3 or 4 days later, I woke up. I was in my breakfast room and I was journaling and I wrote "Slow Down, Chase." That's where the life part of living is. And you know, what's Eric's song?
Living part of life.
So I was like, shit, I can't write that. I was like, well, yes, I can. It's life part. Mine's life part of living. And the songs are not similar whatsoever. But it's a ballad. Just me and a guitar, wrote it by myself. And I'm sitting there crying the whole time I'm writing the song. And then I got one of my best buddies, he actually almost killed himself. And 4 years ago came, got help here, stayed at my house for a while. And then fast forward to last year, him and I are sitting on the back porch at my house around the fire, laughing, having a blast. He's better now. And we start talking about a dog. He's like, dude, I got an idea. You should write a song about a guy in his truck with his dog. And I just started laughing. I'm like, that's been done before. And we joked about it, but then we kept going with the idea that night, and it turned into 3 days later, I wrote it by myself. And it was the third one that I'd written by myself on a guitar. And I was just like, no, I don't want to do this today. I have nothing else to do, but I don't want to go there, because I knew where it was going. I was going to go deep with it. And I did. And I texted him after, and I was just like, that was the one that, I have a dog now because of that song. And so there's real stories, there's real conversations that are leading to these songs that are all going to be on the next record. And that's what I've been doing. I've been back to, and now we're touring again, but I'm like, let's slow it down, guys. There's no reason to go from 0 to 100. Let's be smart about this. So I think I'm going to take all December off, start with Kane in January, February. But it's just, taking time off is the most important thing that I've ever done, and I didn't know I needed it.
What's it tell you about kind of where you are as a person that you had that shift?
I'm finally doing what I feel like I was made to do, as opposed to just doing what's popular.
So do you think you were trying to please other people? Like, are you a pleaser by nature?
I think it was working, first of all, and I think I just didn't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't learn to play guitar until I was like 22 years old. So I think it just took me time to figure out how to do it. Yeah. And like I said, when you're having success, that's something that you don't even really believe in.
It's hard to change when it's working.
Exactly, yeah.
It's really hard.
We're taking a shift on this next record that's going to be unexpected, and there's no other option for me, though. I can't do the other thing anymore.
You just can't do it.
Like, no way.
How did Jay happen?
So we talked to him, like I said, for about 8 years. He wouldn't work with me for a while. He's like, no, that's not my thing. I don't want to do that. I knew. I'm like, Jay, I'm telling you, it is your thing if we just get it right. And I never thought it would ever happen. And then my manager heard the stuff I was writing by myself on an acoustic guitar. And that's what Jay wants. He doesn't want a produced thing. He wants to hear it sung into my phone. And then we turn it into this thing. And so my manager sent his manager like 4 or 5 songs. And he's like, hey, just listen. This is a different thing than we've talked about before. And he loved them. And so we went in, we recorded "If I Were Rock and Roll," we recorded one more. But it's awesome. It's fun to... I kept sending him all the ballads I was writing. He's like, these are great, man. Love them. We need something that's a little more in your face. Yeah. We got to get a rocker. He said, write it with Beth or write it with whatever. I said, okay, I got Montana. I'm not going to write in a week, I don't think, anymore. Maybe once a week, possibly. But I want to go on retreats, because then you can get away. You're not distracted by the world. And you have a purpose. You're like, okay, we got this song. what else do we need? We need something over here that's a little more drop D, angry, whatever. So we went to Montana with John Byron, Blake Pendergrass, who wrote 865 on the Wallin record.
Yeah,
which
great,
is cool because
great song.
Unbelievable. I'd written once with them, and that one was the first time we'd ever written. It was before we went to Montana. And I had all these plans to bring all these stud songwriters from Nashville out to Montana, go to Florida for one. And then I wrote with those guys. I was like, no, I don't. Ashley Gourley is one of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Yep.
But Ashley, first of all, he's not going to go to Montana.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. And these guys are hungry, and they're awesome. And they've only been heard once, which is 865. And then we wrote Always Tomorrow before, which is, I'll send you that one too. It's a piano vocal. It's unbelievable. But the thing I loved about it was going straight to McGraw. Like, it was, guys, if we write it this way, I'm not going to record it. But if he sent it to Tim, I guarantee he would. But that's not what I want to do. I want to write for myself. I want to write a record. And they were like, hey, let's shift. And we did. And we wrote one of, hopefully, the second or third single off this next record. If it's not a single, we're stupid. Hopefully it will be, because it's that song that if you do it at the right time, it's the Live Like You Were Dying type thing. It's the Anything But Mine, you know. So we went out to Montana with those guys. We wrote 8 songs in 3 days. We golfed all day one day. We fished all day the other day. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, we ruined the trip. But what I realized was, no, that was perfect. Because then you get home, we're a little tired one of the days. We only wrote 1 song that night. Then the next day after fishing, we wrote 3 that night. And I was just like, man, that's how it needs to happen. Go out and have a blast during the day, and then go home and get to work.
What's that process for you?
For us, that trip, it was... It's different, because when I'm writing, like here in Nashville, it's show up at 11, be done by 3, somebody's got to pick up a kid, go to practice, whatever. Out there, it's more, guys, let's smoke some cigars, let's drink some whiskey, and whatever happens, happens. And it's cool because it's not as much pressure. There's nobody has to be anywhere. But we're sitting there with acoustic guitars. John was the one in Montana, that they had the cheapest guitar you could ever find. But his guitar was lost.
Oh.
The airline lost it. So he's sitting there writing, it had rocks in it. Like this guitar had no business writing these songs, but that thing wrote half of my record with John, and he's playing. I like to let those guys play more for most of the songs, because then if I do it, it's gonna be what I do. And I know what I do really well. That's why I need those guys to help me write a record.
How many of them are your ideas versus theirs?
About half.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's my idea, like my brother, we wrote a song called Cheers to That. And it was my brother's idea. He's like, he wanted to write it for years. And my brother's not a songwriter. And so he keeps telling me that. I'm like, oh man, that sounds like something I should write with Riley. I don't know why. And it just never happened. So I'm out there. I'm like, guys, we're drinking all day on the boat. I'm like, or on the rafts. I'm like, my brother wants this song to happen so bad. And then all of a sudden, we just start singing it on the river. Like, cheers to whatever it is you're drinking about. And so it just felt good. We wanted to sing it on the river that day. And so that night, we wrote it. But that was one that was fun to write, because there was no tracks. We're not making it sound all cool. We didn't even truthfully know what chords to play while we were writing it. So we're just slapping on this cheap guitar that has rocks in it. Somebody's clapping in the background on the table. We're all singing it and having a blast. Just, we're all singing on the work tape. And that's when we knew it, 2.5 minutes after the work tape's done, we're just sitting there dying laughing, like, this song is fun. So when you take that with no chords, send it to Jay, I was like, Jay, this thing's a hammer. Like, you make up the chords, I don't care. Let's get in the studio and make this thing come to life, and we're gonna.
So he's such a savant.
He's insane. You've seen Eric.
I've seen it in motion, yeah.
So to me, the best thing that could ever happen to Eric was Jay, vice versa too. Because they created this thing back however many years ago.
15, 16,
yeah,
something like that.
And it was not popular at the beginning. It was a gutsy move. But you've seen how Eric's career's done. So me taking what I do, and that's another thing. We're not trying to be Eric. That's the last thing me or Jay want. So we're going to create my own sound. It's going to have a little bit of that to it, just like Brothers Osborne, Miranda, Cage the Elephant. I mean, he's got a sound about him. To me, he's the best producer in the world. And when you take a song that doesn't even have chords and just give it to him and say, let's have fun with this, that's going to be a blast. And we're not going to go in. So we wrote the record in Montana, half of it, and then we did another one in Florida. Same thing, golfed all day, went on the boat one day. We wrote a song on BK's boat called Key West in California, or Key West in Colorado. And that was, it was raining, and we were sitting there writing on a boat, six guys, having a blast, drinking, having a good time.
Do you ever, is it ever embarrassing? I don't even know how to ask this question. This is like, this is a question that you and I would ask you if we were having beers at the right. bar, not with cameras on. But if it were me, right, like if I, as somebody who doesn't do it, do you ever say, fellas, like, how about this thought? And is it ever embarrassing if you feel like this is a real stretch? Like, I'm just going to throw this out here and see what they think.
Yeah, it can be uncomfortable sometimes.
Once you're successful, I guess it's different. Like, context changes. Yeah, once you have done it and people know you're capable of doing it, nothing's really out of bounds.
That's huge. And that's why writing with John and Blake has been huge for me. Hunter Phelps is a big part of that, too. And we wrote A Lonely Few Are and Drink a Beer. Talking got him in together. He has like 9 songs on the radio right now.
Good crazy. Lord.
Good for him.
Beers are on him.
Beers on him. I mean, he probably wrote that. He did write Jameson Rogers' song that I think is about to go number one. He's got a lot of beer songs. Good for him.
Good for him.
I mean, every time he writes, he has a Bush Light in his hand, too. So it's real. But writing with those guys, like you said, in their minds, like, I know how good they are. I think they even know how good they are right now. Like, they're starting to get it because they are, to me, two of the best writers coming up in town. But you're right. When I say something, and I'll say it, like, guys, this is weird. I know this is going to sound funny, but let's figure out a way to make it work. And if you come like that, and I've always had a little bit of different stuff that I do than most people, I feel like, anyway. But now it's going to come together as opposed to, like, it's been all over the place. But now Jay is going to bring it together. So when I bring some of the ideas, some of the lyrics and cheers to that, it's like, what? If you write that with a hit songwriter, they're going to be like, that's not, what? That's a terrible line. But those guys are like, nah, let's say it, man. They're hungry and they're open to saying some weird stuff.
How many people tell you they have song ideas that you should do?
God.
Is it every day?
It's happening a lot more lately. And some of them are good. But some of them are like, what's weird is sometimes you'll be having a conversation and when beer or wine gets going, that's when they're usually terrible.
Red Akins was sitting in that chair a couple weeks back, a month ago. I don't even know when it was, like a month ago. And I left the studio here and I was going to the airport to fly home. And I got a text from Rhett, and all he cares about is dogs football. So he wanted to know everything, you know, but what do you know, man? I'm hearing this. And I said, hey, I got this idea I want you to think about. And I said, I know you hear this every day, so just humor me. So I tell him this idea. Here's the idea. She's the Proof, okay? And it has
already
all these different connotations. Mm-hmm. She is the proof that I am a man. Mm-hmm. She's the buzz in my whiskey, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing. She's the Proof. She's what gives me the buzz.
That's a good title.
It's a great title.
And it's a good idea. If you give that, if you said that to me, I'd be like, okay, we can work with that.
Okay, then let's do it.
Some people, yeah, he didn't write it?
He told me, no, he said, I don't know, he made fun of me. So let's write it.
Yeah, but Rhett's, oh, come on, that's a good idea.
Okay, me and you're going to write it.
I'm down. I would 100%
done deal.
I'm going to wrap my mind around that. We should bring Bethard into that too.
Let's do it.
If we didn't bring Casey into that, it would be stupid. Let's do it.
Okay, deal.
I'm 100% in, for real. Rhett just missed one right there.
Because, like, I just was, like, I was thinking about my wife. I was on an airplane thinking about my wife. Like, I can't do this without her. Mm-hmm. I can't do anything without her. I can't do life without her. I can't be this guy who stands up in front of the globe every day and demands that you listen to me. Mm-hmm. Whatever I'm saying, I don't care what sport it's about, I don't care what, I am going to do it with all of this passion.
Yeah.
if she doesn't believe in me, I don't have the balls to have that passion.
Yeah,
so I'm sitting there thinking, like, she's the proof of why I'm doing this. I'm like, man, she is the buzz in my beer.
Yeah. I've never had that, so I'm going to need you and Casey to help me bring that one home.
Let's do it. Done. All right. Y'all heard it here first.
You guys are going to have...
going to be on Chase's next record, I hope.
Dude, we got to write it quick then, because we're recording, I think, in December.
I know. You got to write it fast.
But that's another thing, too. That's great. I'm serious. We're writing that. Casey's involved. Done. And so Jay, another thing about that is Jay doesn't want to go in and record 2 or 3 songs, singles, and he'll do it, but he doesn't want to. And he was, I said, what do you want to do, man? He said, can you give me like 3 or 4 weeks? Just you and I, band, go in and record a record without distractions. I don't need you leaving for the road for the weekend, then coming back on Monday and be ready to go again. I need you for 3 or 4 weeks. It's like, all right, December or March, let's make it happen. I'm in. So we're going to do that. There's going to be no distractions, and we're going to record the whole record. I don't know, 14, 15 songs, I have no idea. But we're gonna have to write She's the Proof before that.
I mean, I'm ready. I mean, I have a flight this afternoon, but I could cancel it. We'll do it. And that would be one of the coolest things. You know how long I've wanted that? I've wanted to contribute to a country music song for a long time, and I will tell you, this is the God's honest truth. There are a lot of my ideas on other people's records.
Well, you should be a songwriter on that then.
No.
Song ain't happening without you.
Yeah.
If you're the one that gave the idea, that's another thing. On this next record, like Cheers to That, if that goes on the records,
your brother's going to get a credit.
He's getting on there.
Yep.
100, it's a simple title. Anybody can think of that, but the way he's talked about it for a year and a half to 2 years, I would have never written it, but he kept bringing it up. He's like, come on, man. Got to write Cheers to That, because he says it all the time. He'll be hammered, whatever, and say something like, Cheers to That. Justin Thomas, golfer. He doesn't know it yet. He might hear it here first. He's going on the record.
Awesome.
He walks up to me at Troubadour, and he doesn't need the money, let's be honest, but.
He's a great kid.
He's awesome.
He's a great kid, man.
But he walks up to me at Troubadour.
Should call him a kid. He's a great dude.
He is. Yeah. I mean, he is.
I'm a fossil. He's a lot younger than me.
He's, what, how old is he?
Mid-20s, maybe mid to late 20s, 27, 28 maybe.
Damn, he's doing well.
he's
ahead of the game.
Listen, that dude is a ball player.
He's got, it was him and Spieth. We golfed one day together. We were together downtown one night. I met him, went to the bar, Sellers, one of our buddies, connected us. Went out that night, had a good time. I kept going out. They were dead set on hibachi. They went and had their hibachi. I was like, if I go have hibachi, I'm going straight to bed. So the next day, though, we talked that night, like, hey, 11 o'clock, Troubadour, let's go, golf course. And I'm in. I show up. They're on the first first hole. And so as I'm pulling up, I can see the whole stretch of the first hole. I'm like, that's definitely them, because they're 50, 70 yards ahead of everybody else, and they're right in the middle. So I take my cart, drive up to them, and I just pull up and smile and looking at them. We got a beer already. It's 11 a.m. And Jordan looks at me. He just looks up, sees me, and just drops his head. Like, oh, the kind of that moment of,
this
day just got intense. And Wallen came that day. Luke ended up out there. Darius was out there. And we're out there with Justin and Jordan. And it was one of those special days. It just doesn't, you don't plan them. It just happened. Then the next time I'm out there, it was one of those days. Same group of people. We ended up at the silo at the end of the day, sunset, and perfect day. And Jordan comes up to me the first part, the beginning of that day. I think it was a club championship or something. So he wasn't golfing. He was just hanging. And he walks up to me, got a cold beer. He said, boys, I'll tell you what, it is a bad day to be a cold beer. And as soon as he said it, I'm like,
let me get my phone out and let's put it. Yep.
What? How have I never thought of that? It's probably been written, but not the way I wanted to write it. And so that was the first song we wrote in Montana, and Justin doesn't know it yet.
But that's unbelievable.
He's a songwriter. And that's the whole premise of it. It's like, it is a bad day to be a cold beer, because they are all dying today.
That is awesome, man. Yeah,
so it was, that was Justin's idea. I looked at him, my first reaction was, I don't know why I said this, because he's not a writer. I was like, have you written that song? And he was like, I don't write songs, no. But it's a bad day to be cold beer. I was like, you're going to write a song now.
You know he's Roll Tide.
I know.
That's Bama as it gets, right there, Bubba.
Roll Tide. By the way, the Tar Heel
Yeah, I wore these for you today.
Jordans are awesome.
I wore the Carolina 11s just for you.
They sent me those.
Our boy J-Bone.
J-Bone. Hey, J-Bone sent me a pair. And, yeah, we had a tough go this weekend.
Yeah, it was a rough one. Why do you think Mac has been able to turn it around, though?
The funny thing is, I've been a part of a turnaround like that. So, it's half the time in college, it's not the players. It is definitely the coaches. Like, and you get to the Alabama, Clemson, Georgia level, all those guys, you got to have the players. But to be a top 10 team, you have to have a good coach that can just make you believe that you're good. When Chuck Pagano came in with Butch Davis when I was a junior, we went from a very, very bad football team with the same players the next year to a promising football team, then a good football team the next year. And it was just the command. When Butch walked into the room, he was that figure of like, oh, whatever he says.
He has that goes. Aura about him.
Yeah, 100%. He, to me, is an unbelievable coach. I don't know why he has not been at bigger schools. I guess the trouble he may have gotten into at other places, I don't know. I actually don't know what happened at Carolina. But he's an unbelievable football coach, and he demands respect, and he knows what he's talking about. He makes you want to play football as opposed to, dear God, I want this season to be over. He makes you want to play. You know there's hope. You know there's light at the end of the tunnel for our turnaround, which happened the next year. And that was also you bring in Chuck Pagano as a D coordinator. Chuck made you want to play football. And he loves you. Like, he genuinely loves you as a person. And that's reciprocal. And it's just something about it that makes you love the game and makes a group of guys come together and want to play together.
Do you chat with those guys these days at all?
Yeah, I actually did a Bruce Arians event last year. Yeah. I think I played acoustic, and we played golf, and Chuck was there. Bruce was there. This was, I think, before they won the Super Bowl. And then we did another one after. But, yeah, I talk to him all the time, and we'll text. And he always says, love you, buddy. Hope you're awesome. And he'll care about you more as a person than he will as a football player. And I only got to play a quarter and a half under Chuck. I was playing unbelievable football. Like, okay, if I keep this up, I'm playing football as a career at least for a few years. And then it snapped my ankle, and I was done. And Chuck said it. He comes up to me. I'm sitting at the bar eating lunch, and he walks up. We'd talked already. His wife was there. He comes up and sits there and looks at the bar. He's like, hey, I got his sandwich. I was like, you ain't got to do that, coach. He said, son, you only played a quarter. I only got to coach you for a quarter and a half. The least I can do is buy you a damn sandwich. And I just started laughing. Because he's my favorite player or favorite coach I've ever played under. And I only played a quarter and a half. And because he left the next year for the Ravens. I remember the call when he called all the defensive players. He said, hey, man, I'm going to the Ravens. I absolutely loved playing with you. And I understood because I'd be up there watching film with him.
Did you know he was going to end up being a head coach in the NFL?
No, not at all. But he'd be watching film and stuff, and he'd just stop and he'd just start venting. And it's the funniest thing. And him and I were close, but he'd just start venting about, like, God, this college thing, I can't stand it. I cannot stand this. I don't want to be going into kids' living rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And talking to parents and trying to convince them that I'm going to take care of their son. I want to coach football. And so when he finally called and said he was going to the Ravens, I was like, I get it, coach.
Yep.
That sucks. But go do what you got to do. And it's the Ravens. Him as the D coordinator for the Ravens, I was like, that is going to be awesome because the Ravens defense is
always nasty.
Always nasty. I think Ed Reed was still playing then. Yeah, he would have
still been Ray?
Playing. He might have been.
They were stuck. Terrell Suggs?
Yes, he was because.
They were sick.
Rex Ryan, yeah. It was that defense because Rex Ryan came for a couple days. That's another thing. When you get Butch in there, Chuck in there, they're bringing Rex Ryan in to talk to us. Best, I think he was the head coach of the Ravens then, or D coordinator. He was D coordinator.
I don't know.
And when you got guys like that coming in, that makes you you're smarter at football. You love the game more. You're better at it. You're around people who are the real deal. And that's what Max brought to Carolina.
It blows my mind what Coach Saban, the speakers, we were just talking about this Saturday on my show with Coach Saban. The people that he brings in, I mean, you're talking Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking like Alex Smith just came in and talked to these kids. You got Ernie Johnson. I was just talking about that a minute ago. Like, the opportunity to hear somebody like that say, this is a get-to job, not a got-to job.
Yeah, that's it.
I take that. It's in my phone. Like, I wrote Ernie a text and told him, that is the most simple, most profound thing.
Yeah.
Because when you are a driven human being and you go and you go and you go and it's so hard to be where your feet are, and then when you're gone, you think, man, I don't know if I can keep doing this. You start complaining. You let that crap start to penetrate your soul. Mm-hmm. And then you go, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lord. I get to do this.
Yeah, he brings those people around to make you want to do it, and you get to do it. That's such a good way of putting it. Like, I mean, when Butch Davis walked in the room, I grew up a Gator. Down in Florida, it was Florida, Florida State. A couple of those years, Miami finally got there, and they got there because of Butch.
Because of Butch.
And Butch was beating up on the Gators. And the fact that he never wanted, he did win a title at Miami. That was his title.
Yep.
100%. And when he walked in the room, I remember the first time, I'm just like, that is Butch Davis. That is actually him. Wow, I cannot believe this just happened. And it's kind of that thing. I get to play for him.
One of my favorite moments I've had in my career was the very first game Jim Harbaugh coached at Michigan was against the University of Utah out in Salt Lake. And they flew Coach Davis and me. If you remember, he worked at ESPN for a while.
That's right.
Me and him were colleagues.
Was that right after Carolina?
It was right after Carolina. So he flew me out there, or he and I flew out there. And on Friday, we had a bunch of Sports Center stuff to do. And so Friday evening, we go out to dinner. He booked the dinner, and we sit down at the table, and he goes, young man, I'm going to tell you one thing. He goes, I love your passion. I order the wine. I said, yes, sir, and damn, was it good wine. Coach Davis knows wine. But anyway, look, I've kept you too long.
Oh, you're good.
I love you, and me I appreciate too, man. You, man. I love your spirit. I always have. And every time that we get to chat, I love how introspective you're willing to be. I love how vulnerable you're willing to be. And it always inspires me every time.
Yeah. Well, man, let's get patio around my house. Let me know next time you're in town. And we can.
Well, now that we're going to write a song together, I'm going to fly. You tell me when we're doing it.
That's where we either need to write it there or on Lake Norman.
Okay.
Either
well, Lake Norman's out my back door, so I got that part handled.
I'm down for either one, but you're going to love, because you've known me for a long time, you're going to love, but you know who I am.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to cut you off. When I saw that on Instagram, that's how I even know about the song. When I saw it, okay, and I heard the very first verse, and not only what you were saying, but the way you were saying it, the very first thing I thought this is different. This is a very different thing.
That's awesome.
That's the very first thing that entered my mind. And I keep up, dude. I know, like, I like that.
But you know me.
Yep.
And you, I'm sure you could tell. We've never really talked about this, but I'm sure you could tell what was out there in the world was not who this guy is.
Yeah.
And that's just, you live and you learn, you figure out. Like I said, I am not good at fame or being a public figure. I'm flat out bad at it. But this all leads back to your original question of, like, last year I wasn't a public figure. I got to just live my life. And now that's what I really want to do, is like show that person, because there's no reason to create this character over here, or whatever it was with the music and social media and all that. What you're going to see, to reference Luke Combs, what you're going to see is what you get with me on this next record. And I'm excited, man. I'll send you some of the songs. I'll send you Always Tomorrow. You're going to lose your mind on that one. And then I'll send you Rock and Roll.
Yeah, I got to have them.
Always Tomorrow is just a piano vocal that was just a demo. It's not a good sounding thing, but it's kind of, I'm going to play that for Jay and be like, we don't need to change this that much. Although, you do what you want, because you're the man. I mean, he'll make it awesome. But man, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to write that song. We got to get Bethard on it. We'd be dumb not to. Yeah, at some point we just need to chill and have a night.
Done.
Or a couple nights. Dude, good
appreciate
seeing you,
brother.
I told y'all you were going to learn a lot. Look, that guy has fascinated me for a really long time. As you heard him say there and heard me say off the top, we've been friends for a while. And every single time that I'm around him, whether that's at a show or doing an interview As we were talking about on the podcast, we've never sat down and had a bunch of drinks together and really spent a lot of like time together as friends. It's mostly been professional time. But even during that professional time, there's a unique bond because he's willing to go to places of vulnerability that I'm also willing to go, but I don't meet a whole lot of people that do. Kip Moore's one of those guys too. He's always willing to go to those places. So I really appreciate Chase offering that perspective to us and sharing with us that for all those years and even all those albums, he goes back now and listens and goes, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I decided to put that out into the universe. I can't believe I decided to let myself become something that maybe I didn't want to be. And damn it, now I'm going to take myself back. I'm going to put work out that has that level of depth that I can share. And man, do I appreciate that. And I mean it, y'all. This new single, if you haven't seen it, go to his Instagram. He put the song out acoustically on his Instagram. And the first second I heard it, I texted him and I went, oh, buddy, this is different. I mean, in the first verse, he has Dale Earnhardt, America, and the SEC. What else do you want? Thanks to Chase for coming. Really appreciate it. These guys are so busy now that COVID's over and they can go back out and they can have that energy exchange with their fans. So they're playing all over the place. And so I really appreciate them taking the time to come out here to our studio and share their lives with us. Thank you guys for investing. If you love it, tell everybody. You got to hear this podcast. We've had everybody from Travis Tritt to Trace Adkins to John Crist to now we just had Chase on. So please tell everybody. Subscribe, rate, and review. That helps us grow this thing. Thank you guys. Appreciate y'all hanging out and believing in us. This is the Marty Smith Podcast from Outsider Studios. Be well, everybody. Thank you. Appreciate it.